This coming Shabbos is going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Vayitzeh, and we're told Vayitzeh Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva Vayilech Harana, that Yaakov left Be'er Sheva and went to Haran. And the commentaries debate why the Torah had to focus on both where Yaakov left from and where he was going. And that's because people sometimes have a habit that when they leave somewhere, sometimes to get away from something and sometimes to get somewhere. But in Yaakov's case, he was doing both. He was leaving his parents' home to get away from Esav, but also in order to go to Haran to find a wife. And the Stipler adds that the same was true in the olden days, when even one who'd left to the yeshiva to go work was able to remain committed to Torah values, but still he needed to begin his life in yeshiva to learn how to remain Torah true. Today, one needs to go get a yeshiva education, even if he won't be a successful lamdan, merely to serve as a deterrent from the streets. And a person has to be careful in that regard. However, and it might be a good time to plug a very good, important book written by Rav Aaron Lopiansky called Ben Torah for Life, that a person has to be able to understand, even when he leaves the yeshiva, he needs to have a connection. And maybe that's why Yaakov spent 14 years in yeshiva, Shem Be'ever, to know how to proceed once he left. We're told, Vinei Sulam Mutzav Arzav Rosho Magia Shamayim. As Yaakov Avinu was traveling, he was dreaming, and there was a ladder with its feet on the ground, and it said in the heavens. Rav Chaim Sabato explains that the dream was a message based on Yaakov's thoughts. It was a reference to man's role in the world. We live to climb the ladder one step at a time. If we take it each step at a time, there's no limit to how high we can go, assuming we want to go. But at the same time, Hashem's influence meets us going downward until they get us into the ground at the darkest of moments. And then they too rise up. So Yaakov was the forefather who prepares us for Galus, and he teaches us that even in the darkest of times, we need to keep climbing, and the challenges in the process will rise with us. Yaakov makes it to Haran, and he starts all over again, and he meets Rachel and Leah, and he marries two wives, one of them has a hard time with a situation, and she starts to have children. And when she has her fourth child, she says, Hapam Odeas Hashem. Leah says, this time I'll thank Hashem. And the Gemara teaches us that from the day the world was created, there was no one who was Modet to Hashem until Leah came along at the time of Yehuda's birth. And thus Yehuda, whose name becomes synonymous with Judaism all the time, is based on this principle of Hodah. Yehuda is later also known in life for Hodah, but a different type. The Gemara tells us that in regard to the episode with Tamar, Yehuda, Hodah v'lo Bosh, Yehuda turned around and he admitted, and he was not embarrassed. He too was the epitome of Hodah. Yet, there, unlike by Leah, where the word Hodah meant thanks, it referred to an admission. Is there any connection between thanks and an admission? So Rav Hutner says, absolutely. He notes that contained within each and every Hodah, thanks, there's a recognition that I couldn't do it without you. And the recognition of man's limits is also an admission of man's failings. Rav Kook carries the idea into the Moda Ani we recite each and every morning by offering thanks at the first moment of the dawn of another day. We're also recognizing and admitting that Hashem created and runs the entire world. Well, Rachel sees all the birth of the children, and she gets very frustrated, and she cries out to Yaakov, and she says, Havali banim v'im ayin mesa anochi, give me children. If not, it's as if I'm dead. Rav Shechter would often point out to us the great distress of Rachel Imenu was her diametric opposition to Mordechai ben David's famous song, Ha'avar ayin v'ha'asidah dayin daga min ayin, that the past is nothing and the future is still to be determined, so where am I going to get anxiety? Because Rachel cried out to her husband that she won't have any children, she'll consider herself as if she was dead, and if she had accomplished nothing in her lifetime. And even though such an individual identifies with the past, that's not sufficient. You have to have children to be able to link up with the future as well. Only a rush has a very brief life, indeed considering that he only lives for a very brief moment of the present. But we live above the lamalam in Ateva. We live above the present. And a person has to understand that and put that into context as well. We're told, Hama'at kachteches yeshiva lakachas gamas du dani b'ni. Was it not enough that you're trying to take my husband, you also want to take my son to Dahim? How could Leah dare challenge Rachel? Didn't she know that Rachel had given her the simanim? So Rav Shalom Shradran explains that these simanim, these great tricks that Leah shared with Yaakov, so that Yaakov thought she was Rachel, they weren't some magic words. They were the mitzvos of nidachala and adlaka saner. And this is based on the idea of the das kenim ibali atosos. Rachel didn't introduce this as simanim. She just said that these are Jewish laws that a kala needs to know about. So Leah never actually understood the extent of the sacrifice that Rachel had made for her. And so therefore she said, Amad kachtei chazishti. And at the same time, that's the ultimate chesed, that the people don't even realize what you're sacrificing for. When Rachel took the trafim, she put them under the saddle and sat on them. The Zohar Kodesh explains that she took the trafim so that Laban couldn't use these idols and their spiritual impurity to find Yaakov and family. And by sitting on the trafim, she rendered them useless. How? So the Zohar explains that when we sit on something, we're showing that we degrade it. And once trafim are degraded, they're powerless. Rav Avigdor Nebenzahl explains the same thing is true about the other forces we think control our lives. They have an effect on us only when we allow them to ensnare us. But once we decide to overpower those forces are also powerless. And that's a very critical message for us to think about. Because sometimes we get traumatized by bigger things in our lives. And sometimes we say to ourselves, those things we won't overcome. And what we need to remind ourselves in those moments is, what Rav Nebenzahl is telling us here as well, we only have forces that control our lives when we allow them to mess us up. But by the way, once we don't let those forces terrorize us, they become wimpy, useless, and nothing. Why did you hide to run away, Yaakov Avinu says, in the context. Yaakov was a tremendously strong man. He was able to defeat a malach. His children, too, were quite strong. So why does he run away from Laban? What was he afraid of? So Rav Yashav Zatzal explains that Yaakov wasn't afraid of Laban, per se. He didn't want to have to confront Laban because he knew that if he did, Hashem would strike Laban down. And it would look like Yaakov was a kafui tov, like he was an ingrate for destroying the man who gave him everything. And so fearful of the chil of Hashem, Yaakov preferred to leave quietly in the middle of the night. Didn't say goodbye, didn't have anything to do about it, but he left so that he wouldn't do anything that could be conceived to be a chil of Hashem. Finally, in the Haftorah, we read, Vayivrach Yaakov stei aram vayavod Yisrael b'yishol b'yishol shamar, that Yaakov ran away to the fields of Laban, but there the Navi continues, he worked for Yisrael. And so why is he first referred to as Yaakov and later as Yisrael? Why the double mention of the women? And so Rav Shechter points out that the reference was to Yaakov Avinu's experiences with finding a shidduch. First he set his eyes on finding a wife and worked at it, but it was as easy as Yamim Achadim. And then surprise, even after the trickery, the additional years were served in earnest. Yaakov had to work harder at it emotionally. Rav Shechter pointed out that the toughness of the shidduch process for Yaakov was necessary because each of these marriages would produce members of the Shvatim and ultimately Yam Yisrael. Things that come with effort and sometimes through difficulty are things that last. And thus the Navi begins with Yaakov, but ultimately the destiny of the Jewish people results as a consequence of Yaakov's efforts and his attitude of sticking with it. Parshas Vayetze gives us our first insight into Yaakov as a Av of Galus, as the one who's supposed to guide us when we're in our tough times. And certainly Yaakov shows us that our job in those tough times is to be strong, to be proud, to hold on to our values, and never to be able to be shaken. And may HaKadosh Baruch Hu make that our modus operandi, give us the strength when we're feeling weak, and to be sure that we get to the day that is the ultimate Shabbos, a Shabbat Shalom to all.